Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, folks, it almost defies belief, but the tot who was once on the Mike Douglas show, the teen who ran roughshod over all the top amateurs and college players, the 21-year-old who won the 1997 Masters, and the legend of the game who won the career Grand Slam three times over. Yes, he is turning 50 years old. You with Rex Hoggard, Todd Lewis. Rex, how does it sound when Tiger Woods, the immortal one, is now turning 50?
It makes us all feel old. I think Todd and I both started looking at that going, like we were there. We were there way too early for this to actually come to fruition. His birthday is this month, December 30th. The idea that he's turning 50, I think everybody had a similar idea. Like if you were start walking backwards, his top 50 moments in his career, I kind of took what I thought was going to be a bit of a shortcut and just wanted to keep it to on-course stuff. But I sort of, as I worked through it, I realized you could do a top 50 moments off the course. You can do it on the course. You can do a top 50 moments with media interaction, with other player interaction. It has been a life fully lived. And I love the idea that you go through and you look at all the different sort of stages of Tiger Woods. I think we've gone through 1.0 and 2.0 and 3.0. I'm not quite sure which one we're at right now. But everything about the game for the last two plus decades has almost exclusively revolved around Tiger Woods. Most of it for the good, for the great, what he's been able to do for the game of golf. Some of it not so great, certainly for him. There was a lot of personal trials and tribulations along the way, but it's been an amazing run, and to think that it's 50 is pretty stunning.
How about for you, T. Lou? I mean, half of your professional career has been spent documenting one player, probably not dissimilar to, you know, NBA beat writers covering a LeBron James, or Major League Baseball, who had the pleasure to cover a Ken Griffey or a Derek Jeter. What's that been like for you professionally to be in that situation, covering a singular talent for the past quarter century?
Well, I think most, first off, you have to lay down the groundwork that this guy who, he urbanized golf. I mean, he was such a social phenomenon. I mean, when you bring golf to the inner city, if you think about it, kids who were growing up and thinking about being basketball players, football players, baseball players. Well, when Tiger was at the height of his powers, he was influencing those young men and women to become golfers. So you think about that. And when he was the dominant force in sports and maybe the most recognizable person on the planet behind the president of the United States, you're like, holy cow, this is the guy I got to cover. So it definitely comes with focus, borderline intimidation that you have to get through, but it was an honor. Nice. I mean, I look back on my career and I'm like, wow. It's like, man, I didn't cover Tiger Woods throughout his entire career. The earliest stages in his career I wasn't a part of, but to get him right at his highest moments and some of his lowest, as Rex was talking about, was truly an honor as a journalist who got into this craft to cover the best on the planet and to do that. I mean, it's something I'll never forget.
And I don't want to go, as Tiger's now turning 50, I don't want to turn this into, oh, you know, what's Tiger's greatest on-course moments? I mean, we can rattle them off on the top of our head quite easily, whether it's the 97 Masters, 2000 US Open, Tiger Slam, 2008 US Open. Rex, you're going to have a column up on golfchannel.com going through those moments, as well as every other media outlet in golf is going to have countdowns like that as well. So I wanted to start with sort of personal reflections of covering Tiger now that he's turning 50 in the various stages. And Rex, you've been covering Tiger the longest, started essentially as Tiger did with his pro career in 1996. What was that experience like for you to have this fresh hot shot come out on the PGA Tour and take over the game of golf so quickly?
I think to Todd's point, he made golf cool. And before that, it's probably hard. It's hard for me to certainly tell my kids. It's probably hard for me to tell Lab this, that it used to not necessarily be cool to play golf. Like now it is. Like now it's all we've ever known. I think it starts for me in 1996. I was working at the Orlando Sentinel as a general assignment reporter, and the late Jeff Babineau, who was the golf writer at the time, he had me go out to the Disney tournament that year, and he wanted me to essentially, long before Twitter, long before social media, he wanted me to be the Tiger tracker and to sort of follow everything Tiger did. And that was sort of my first assignment in golf, which seems ironic now all of these years later. It has been fascinating to watch to Todd's point, he was bigger than the game. I mean, we always like to say no one is bigger than the game, but certainly Tiger Woods, when you went to the, I went to the four corners of the planet, so did Todd, just to cover every time he went somewhere. If he went to Abu Dhabi, we went to Abu Dhabi. If he went to China, we went to China. And it was pretty amazing there for the better part of two decades, where every week you showed up and the expectation was it was either Tiger or the field. That's not a conversation you have anymore. Certainly not in golf. Even as good as Scottie Scheffler is, we don't have that conversation. And that was a legitimate, honest conversation we had every single week, it seems like, when we showed up. And to go through that brilliance, and I think Todd and I both spent a little bit of time 2 weeks ago at the PNC Championship talking with his contemporaries. These are people, Mark O'Meara, who was friends with Tiger from the very beginning of his career. And there was always a common theme that if you wanted Tiger to do something, just tell him he couldn't. And Mark sort of told a couple of stories about at the World Cup 1 year when they were playing together. And Stevie Williams, who was Tiger's caddy at the time, kind of got on Mark on the front nine on Sunday because Mark was struggling a little bit and he was a couple over par. And Mark was like, no, I got this, watch. And Tiger walks up on the tee box and he goes, hey, Tiger, you need to tighten it up, man. Like, come on, we're going to lose this if you don't get it together. And he said, and Tiger Woods birdied the first three holes on the back nine and eagled the fourth hole. So all you had to do was tell him he couldn't do something. And that's sort of the lore of Tiger Woods. And there's so many stories like that.
I don't want to assume that everyone who listens to this podcast or watches this show or is tuned into Golf Channel these days has been around for the entirety of a Tiger journey, right? There could be new golf fans. You mentioned the boom that Tiger has created. So I'm curious, back in the late 90s, when Tiger's taking the golf world by storm, how did it compare to the recent superstars that we've seen? You know, Rory coming on the scene on the PGA Tour, Jordan Spieth coming on the scene in 2013 to 2015. How do they compare, if at all?
I will take that one real quick, Todd. I will give you the example of, thanks, yeah. In 1997, so this is Tiger Woods as he gets to his peak. And look, I think the greatest compliment you can pay to Tiger is that he always exceeded expectations. And the expectations in 1996 were so ridiculously high that you want to compare him to Jordan Spieth or Rory McIlroy. No one faced what Tiger Woods did when he showed up in Milwaukee and hit the world with Hello World. And everything that he had done to that point in his career, it was pretty ridiculous expectations on his shoulder. And he exceeded them. He wins the Masters by just commanding fashion in 1997. And the first event that I covered that Tiger was in was Bay Hill that year. And I remember doing a story on the pro shop because they essentially had to blow the entire pro shop up to replace everything that was in there with some sort of Nike gear that Tiger Woods would have worn, because they knew that this stuff is going to sell, and it only grew from there.
That's great. Tilo, how about you?
Yeah, look, I think he has exceeded his expectations that were very high, as Rex mentioned when he came out. I was actually covering the PNC Championship this week, and I was talking to Davis Love III about Tiger Woods, and Davis saw it. I mean, the people who knew golf, talking about the golf swing and how to play the game at the highest level, knew this guy was a superstar. And Davis said he's going to win immediately. And this is when he came out in 1996. And sure enough, he beat Davis in a playoff to win his very first tournament in Las Vegas. So he said, well, hang on, folks. This is going to be a great ride. And if you think back, all those expectations, all that hype that was on Tiger Woods when he came out on the PGA Tour, was about to launch his career, especially after he won the Masters in 97. There was a lot of attention on him, deservedly so. There was some resentment from PGA Tour players because everybody was talking about Tiger Woods, Tiger Woods, Tiger Woods. You know, you remember that Curtis Strange interview that he admits he
regrets
saying he'll learn. But you think about not only what he did for the game, but what he did for the sport. I mean, heck, right now we're on the Golf Channel podcast. You could make the argument there probably wouldn't. Well, they couldn't. There may not have been a golf
timing
without
the timing
Tiger Woods.
But the timing was obviously very auspicious.
I get it. I completely get it. But he put television numbers up there that did rival football when he was in contention, especially at major championships. And to do that for golf and to do it for such a long period of time and a consistent period of time is phenomenal.
Tilo, I want to stick with you because you said something interesting earlier where you said it was almost intimidating to cover a player of his stature, probably not dissimilar to a Messi or a MJ in his heyday. So my question is, what are the inherent challenges of covering a global superstar like Tiger was and like Tiger is? How do you do it?
Well, that has evolved from my perspective. I remember a quick story. The first time I was sent out to work on the road for the Golf Channel and cover Tiger Woods at an event was the old Buick in Grand Blanc. It was the Buick Open, I think, and Tiger was a Buick ambassador, so he was playing. And I got to do a one-on-one with Tiger Woods. It's the first time I'm doing a one-on-one interview with Tiger. Guys, you only get one shot at this. And so fear of failing is generally not my motivation, but it definitely was with him. I said, don't screw this up. It was intimidating, but you understand that you are talking to the most prominent sports figure probably in sports at the time, definitely in golf. I would say early when he was, again, at the height of his powers, it was very challenging to break through to him, to try to get really substantive information from him and his camp. Very, very challenging to do so. You really had to work hard. You had to build trust. And, you know, he would show you signs of trust, but not a lot of them. But as he continued in his career, I would say probably 10 years ago, he has become more approachable. He has let his guard down a little more. Obviously his game is not anywhere where it was in the late 90s, early 2000s. But, you know, I think that's part of it. And I think he has a different focus now, and that is what he's doing off the course. And so he uses us in the media to help get his message out a little more. So I think I believe a lot of it is a sincerity with the media, is a better relationship. But at the same time, I think it is purposeful as well. He's a lot more fun to cover now, for sure. You can actually walk down the fairways and have some conversations with him, and it don't have to be about golf. And you can have some, you know, you can needle each other. And so, yeah, it's fun from our perspective now to cover him.
Rex, I would circle back around and say
maybe not 10 years ago, because if 10 years ago, you're sort of getting into some of the things that we alluded to with the scandal and the accidents and the DUIs. Like, trust me, as someone who was covering him during those, he wasn't very forthcoming, nor would I expect him to be. However, I would say early in his career, that's a good way of saying it, Todd. He was a little standoffish. He was a little aloof. There's some stories out there where he felt like maybe he got burned by the media earlier in his career. However, and I was just having this conversation with a colleague of ours. We have there's a golf writing award. It's called the Murray Award. We give it to a player every year for sort of working with the media, being accountable, being forthright, being available. All of the things that we in the media love to have from players. And this colleague brought up the idea that Tiger has never won the Murray Award. It's probably the only award that we have that he hasn't won. And so the conversation was, should he be considered in this context? And I countered, and I had done this story before, no one has spoken with the media over the history of the game of golf more so than Tiger Woods.
He almost always talks pre-tournament
on Wednesday. He would always talk. After every single round, he would always talk. I remember one year at the match play, he had lost, I think it was to Nick O'Hearn or one of those Australians he always seemed to lose to in the first round of that event. Him actually blowing the press off. And I joined John Hawkins. I was early in my career, and he kind of drug me up the hill to the locker room, and we found Tiger, and he took 5 minutes to talk with us. That said, he didn't say a whole heck of a lot in those situations. And Todd is 100% right. What we have now, and I'll go back just a few weeks ago, Todd, when you and I were both in the Bahamas, and we were talking with him. I find him so much more forthcoming and so much more insightful now than he ever was in his career. And look, that goes with the territory. He's 50 years old now. He has kids who are coming up on the grown side. I think he's taken on this role of being a statesman for the PGA Tour. He has evolved into a different person and a different player. However, it certainly wasn't like that for the better part of those two decades.
I want to talk about the different eras of Tiger, and you can think about them as the rocket ship era. Here's this guy taking off, the dominant era, the breakdown era, whether it was his personal life, whether it was his body, the comeback era that we saw start in 2018. So I want to ask a couple of different questions about this. In your opinion, what was the most interesting era for you to cover with Tiger? Not the best, not the most fun. What was the most interesting in terms of storylines, in terms of, you know, weekly interactions with him? What would you say? Todd, you can go first.
I would say the comeback era. When he was coming off all those multiple surgeries, coming off scandal, coming off making some bad choices, you know, we pretty much, I mean, we thought he was going to be a ceremonial golfer. We didn't think mentally and especially physically he had it anymore. And for him to win the Tour Championship and like the Pied Piper lead the fans down the 18th fairway, I mean, I'll never forget, never forget standing on the porch overlooking the 18th green, and I'm watching this happen, and I look over to a prominent player, and he looks at me, and we go, wow, this is unbelievable. And for him to do that, and then I think the following week, you know, go to the Ryder Cup and compete, and then the next year win the Masters? The Masters? I mean, come on. I mean, it's like that was the most interesting era for me, because I don't know how you measure this, but from a guy who was so high, obviously in the right before the turn of the century, and then early 2000s, and then to fall, and then to come back, you can make the argument that he was maybe just as popular coming back, starting in 2018 and winning the Masters in 2019, as he was maybe at the height of his powers when he was launching initially. And that to me was the most interesting, giving everything that he had been through mentally and physically and emotionally to come back and to do what he did. It's just remarkable.
I would put it in the context of swing coach eras. I think that's, in my mind, that's kind of how I wrap my mind around it, because you started with Butch Harmon, and that era was so entertaining and so groundbreaking, and what he was able to do on the golf course that other people simply couldn't do. I would say the most dominant era was probably during the Hank Haney era, though. I think when you look at just statistically what he did in the early 2000s through that 2008 run when injuries started to catch up with him a little bit, I don't know that that will ever be replicated again, but I'm with Todd 100%. Give me the Sean Foley and the Chris Como eras, because that is the one that kept us on our toes. That's the one that you didn't know what was going to happen on or off the golf course. You didn't know if he was going to be, I mean, how many months did we talk about him having the chipping yips? And that was such a small piece of the puzzle. Trust me, that didn't make any of my top 50 list of things that he did either on or off the golf course. And you can just keep going further and further down the list, all of the things that he was able to accomplish. You're right. I was standing on that same porch at East Lake the year he won. That crowd of humanity, just the wave of people. I think it was an indication of how thirsty golf fans were, that they had probably been waiting for this for a really long time. And when he arrived at the back of that clubhouse, I think all the world sort of exhales. One of the ones that stands out to me, and Todd, you and I both were at the Zozo Championship when he won his 82nd PGA Tour title. I remember talking with Gary Woodland, who was paired with him for really the last two rounds. And he talked about he'd played with Tiger, he'd become friends with Tiger, but he'd never seen that version of him. And I think that's the connecting dots there. He connected generations of fans by just not winning in 99, keep going forward through the 2000s. But that generation of fans suddenly was able to join the others, as you pointed out, at Eastlake when he wins the Tour Championship. And then, of course, the Masters.
Let's hone in, guys, a little bit on the dominant era, because we're in the midst of it now with Scottie Scheffler. He might not be winning 7, 8, 9 times like Tiger Woods did in his heyday, but he still is winning, you know, at a pretty remarkable clip as it relates to Scottie, somewhere around 25%. And so when you're in the throes of it, when you're dealing with this week in and week out, when the dominant storyline one A through D is Tiger Woods, is it boring? Is it exhilarating? Is it monotonous? Like how do you recall that era when Tiger Woods is winning basically half of the tournament starts that he tees it up? Tilo, you can go first.
Definitely boring would not enter the category.
But I say boring in the sense that golf fans were like, I want someone else. I'm a little bit sick and tired.
No
of
one ever
this
said
guy
that.
Winning everything.
No one ever said that about Tiger.
Well, I will say you make a great point, Ryan. Like when Tiger Woods came out, and in that era that you're talking about, we had never seen a player do to a golf ball what he was doing. Let's make no mistake. He was launching it forever, hitting shots that we had never seen before. So I think fans for sure respected him, for sure. but not everybody liked him. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, because A, he was seen maybe as a bit of a hotshot. B, really, I mean, it's just because he was focused, I believe. He didn't really interact with fans that much, walking from green to tea. He didn't sign a lot of autographs. He was very robotic. So, in other words, he wasn't relatable. So I don't know if everybody loved him. And so you may be right. There may have been a thirst for other fans to find somebody else to take this Goliath down.
Because hello, Phil.
Exactly. It's, you know, the everyman kind of guy. So I think that there's a lot of truth to that in that era for sure. And he's definitely much more relatable now, as we talked about earlier. But yeah, I mean, it was, first off, the athleticism and what he was able to do in the game was incredible to cover. Then there is obviously the social components about what he's doing in our society that transcends sports and into, you know, the Today Show or the evening news that we would see. And then there's the stuff that unfortunately we covered as well, you know, that it wasn't in that era, but, you know, you were always want, okay, here's his wife, here's his family, here's this, what's, you wanted to get a little bit of what's happening outside the ropes with Tiger Woods. But that was hard to figure out as well. So I don't think it was, it was electric. There was a lot to cover, but it definitely was, it wasn't that boring.
No, yes. I understand what you're asking, right? Yeah, no, it wasn't boring. And that's a great comparison to Scottie Scheffler, because I think we have made what he does on the golf course boring for all the right reasons, because he's just brilliant. The way he's, when he's in full flight, what he's able to do with the golf ball, he can make the game seem a little boring now as he gets dominant. And again, I mean that as a compliment, not as a drawback. When you start going down, and again, everyone's coming up with their top 50 list, there were so many tournaments that he won in just insanely dramatic fashion. And he was winning some by 12 strokes, like he did in 97 at the Masters. But there were a lot more Bob Mays at the PGA Championship than there were sort of what happened in 97 at the Masters or 2000 at the U.S. Open. And just what he was able to do with the golf ball, the chip in on 16 at the Masters, the chip in on 14 at the Memorial. I mean, all of those things are now iconic moments. And so, no, it was never boring. I would say professionally, it was more challenging, because how many times can you say historic or iconic? Or, I mean, there's only so many ways to describe brilliance that I think all of us sort of ran up against. And to Todd's point, he didn't really crack the door open. It's not as though he gave you everything he had on the golf course. He tried for a long time not to give you anything off the golf course.
It is interesting, because everyone remembers like the highlight reel moments, but I don't know. 80 to 85% of Tiger Woods' tournament victories were actually like pretty monotonous. He suffocated the field by playing the best on Sundays. That's why his winning percentage with a 54-hole lead was as good as it was, because he was not going to make mistakes and he just snuffed the life out of the tournaments. That's, I think, as much a part of his legacy as it is the fist pumps whipping the crowd into a frenzy.
I would say that the Tiger that won the Masters in 2019, he played boring golf there. When he was suffocating the crowd in his era.
Well, not for the first nine holes.
Well, okay, true. But I mean, down the stretch, he was more of a calculator, more of a game management guy. When he was suffocating the field, as you talked about in his early stages of career on the PGA Tour, when he was that dominant, he was electrifying. I mean, he hit, to Rex's point, incredible shots.
In the first 54 holes, and then on Sunday he would shoot 68 by snuffing the life out of it, and
he played prevent defense. Yes. Yeah, I see what you're getting at. That's fine. Our kinda. Colleague Doug Ferguson does this great column at the end of the year, I'm sorry, Tilu, where he goes through the bag. So he does the 14 best shots of the year, starting with the driver all the way down to the putter. He's doing it for Tiger Woods on his 50th birthday, and it was such a fun exercise to go through and think about, man, how many unbelievable shots has he hit with that 56-degree wedge? I mean, just think about what he's done just around the greens. Take everything else out of the equation. It was electric.
Tilu, how about 2019 and the Masters? One of the most remarkable achievements that we've ever seen covering the sport. What are your memories from that year? You can even throw back to 2018, you mentioned, with the Tour Championship as well. When the 2019 Masters happens, how are you covering it? How are you trying to contextualize it? And at that moment, when you left Augusta on that Sunday after the final round and Tiger Woods had just won his 15th major, what did you still think was possible?
Ooh, all right, so we'll go back to I never thought he was going to win on Sunday. I never thought he was going to win on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
And you know, maybe it was a
I mean,
cynic
he
in
hadn't.
me.
I mean, he hadn't won a major championship coming from behind. Like, there's ample reasons why.
I mean, I know he won the Tour Championship the prior year, but his back was still a mess. You know, and you're talking about players that are younger and were hotter at that point. I mean, you know, Francesco Molinari, Brooks Koepka, Tony Finau. You know, the, so
Xander.
I, yeah, that's right. So I thought he'd make it interesting, but I didn't think he'd win. And boy, as he has done many times in my career, he proved me wrong. So for him to win, obviously a huge surprise. You know, it's hard to say this, but yes, an underdog story of Tiger Woods winning the 2019 Masters. And every year at the Masters, since I've been covering the Masters for the Golf Channel, the Masters champion has a sit down after the ceremony and the press conference, and then he has a toast with the members. He comes in, he sits down with media partners, and we are one of them. And a little quick story here: there was a lot of talk that, oh, actually, we got the information from Tiger Woods' team that, you know what, he's not coming to do those sit down interviews. So us, CBS, Sky Sports, TSN in Canada, we were like all bummed he's not coming. Our photographers, our producers are starting to pack up lights. And then all of a sudden, just as we're about to get out of there, the Augusta National media relations people come in and said, okay, he is coming in. So we're like, oh, so suddenly we're scrambling and we're getting set up. But you know, you only got two, 3 to 4 questions max, which is fine. You know, you just probably just needed one. But to I, you know, I know you guys do the same thing. You're heavily thinking of your viewer, your reader, your listeners. You want to be their voice, want to make sure that that everyone that is listening, again, reading or watching, are they're informed and entertained. But sitting across from me, it's the greatest player of this generation for sure, modern era. Some say the greatest player ever, and he's wearing the green jacket. He just won the 2019 Masters in surprising fashion, and we're chatting. And I'm like, and I remember again doing my craft, but there's a part of me saying, holy cow, I can't believe this is happening, that he has won the Masters. And to be in that moment, you're like, oh, when he left, I didn't know what to think. I was like, okay,
We were giddy.
Well, first of all, we're super
The
happy,
entire
yeah,
golf world was giddy.
but I didn't know what to think he would do after that, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Would he be able to go on, you know, maybe a little bit of a run, maybe, you know, get to 83, 85, 90, maybe win another major championship. Dare we say, win a couple more, and suddenly we're talking about catching Jack. Or was this it? Or was this his swan song? So I didn't know, but I did say, to your point, being giddy, I was a lot more optimistic that this guy still has a lot of fuel in that tank, and he can compete.
Rex, how about you? What did you think in April 2019? Keep in mind, just a couple of weeks prior, he'd beaten Rory at the match play to sort of signal that his game was starting to round into form. It's easy to say now, oh yeah, that was lightning in a bottle. You know, the guys ahead of him on the leaderboard kicked it away. Tiger got all the breaks. Anytime he was in the trees, he was able to hoist it. He made the putts when he needed to. He avoided Rice Creek on 12. Whatever situation you wanted to look at, I don't think anyone was thinking like, oh no, this is it. This is the last win he's going to have. Obviously, he won a couple months later, but I think projections all of a sudden were pretty high for a 44, 45-year-old.
I don't remember thinking what Todd did on Sunday, where he still didn't think he was going to win it. I was actually there in the grill room because I wanted to sort of be in the middle of where it seems like everyone was watching, including Tiger's family and a whole bunch of the players, because I sort of wanted to feel that vibe. So I don't remember feeling that, but I will go back to, and Todd brought up a good point, the previous when he wins the Tour Championship, and then he goes straight to Paris for the Ryder Cup, and that is, I'll say, broken as I've ever seen a player on a golf course.
100%.
He came up, and Todd, I think you did one of the interviews after one of the rounds. He was getting ready for his Sunday match, and I was standing on the range, and he pulls up in a golf cart, And I remember looking at him and him staring at me and him getting out of the cart. And it sounded like my grandfather trying to get out of the lounger. Like, it did not sound good. There was a lot of creaking. There was a lot of groaning going on. There might have been a couple of choice words thrown in there as well. It was just a combination. He poured everything into Eastlake. He'd gotten on an international flight. It was cold. He'd played a lot of golf. That's what I was thinking. He can still win on the PGA Tour. You're not going to lose talent, and he still is the most talented player in the game. But you do lose your health. And that's when I just started questioning, not necessarily the Masters or anything else, but can he ever win again? Because if that was going to be the byproduct of putting 72 holes into it, I didn't see how that was going to hold up over the long run.
How do you guys view these last couple years? You know, we didn't see him at all in a competitive appearance in 2025 after the Achilles issue and then yet another back surgery. But has it been sad to watch? Has he, with these pedestrian, if not poor performances, diminished his legacy at all? You know, do you want to see more of him? Do you want to see less of him? How do you sort of analyze what we've witnessed as the injuries mount and Father Time keeps ticking along? Rex, you can start.
I think when you look at the last few years, and again, this goes back to what I was just talking about, how the injuries finally just took a toll. When you start talking about seven surgeries just on your back and everything else that he's gone through, Todd and I, again, we saw him walking into the media center just a few weeks ago in the Bahamas, and it's not as though he skipped into that media center. Like, he's moving slowly. There's a lot of deliberate movement to it, and you understand that the toll this has finally taken. I wouldn't say there's sadness there, or I don't feel like he's, at least the last few years competitively, has stained his legacy. That's another conversation when it comes to the things he did off the course may have stained his legacy. And I think that's a legitimate conversation to have. I think because he's been unable to go out there, it's not as though he's playing 10 times a year and missing 10 cuts. He's not doing that. He's showing up at whatever majors he possibly can show up at and playing the best he possibly can. So I don't think that's the issue. I will say, on the other side, it's been interesting and sort of eye-opening to see the leadership role that he has taken. Just not when it comes to the PGA Tour, and he's the chair of the Future Competitions Committee, which will essentially steer what's going to happen to the PGA Tour going forward. But this goes back even, let's go back 5 or 6 years. And we've talked to Davis Love about what it's like to be in the team room with Tiger, even if he's not playing, and how much input he has and how he sees things differently and how he wants to make sure that these teams are structured in a very specific way. He has taken on this sort of this mantle that I don't think I saw earlier in his career. And he's done it relatively quietly. It's not as though he's out in front of the cameras making demands of players or the PGA of America or anyone else. He does it all behind the scenes, but you could see how important all of this is to him because he knows this is part of his legacy.
Yeah, I want to start with that. The fact that he is not only, you know, what he has been able to do, and I think that's really what ignited him, was being a part of the United States Ryder Cup, I guess, management team and getting that going in the direction that he and the United States, the PGA of America, wanted it to go. You move from that to the fact that he really was a huge force in representing and trying to protect the PGA Tour in its battle against LIV and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. And now you look at what he is doing and trying to, in his words, elevate the PGA Tour with a new schedule and beginning maybe in 27 and aligning himself with Brian Rolapp. And yes, he may be quietly not saying a lot in front of cameras, but I think when, as he did at the Hero World Challenge, when he spoke to the entire field there of elite players, he's not very quiet. His voice has a lot of volume. So yes, I think, and he takes, and we heard this in the press conference, Rex, he takes a lot of pride in this. He feels like it's a beautiful responsibility of his. I mean, he easily, with all the money he has, and you know, he doesn't need to do anything else in his career. His legacy is set. He could just chill down in Jupiter and go out on his boat and have all the privacy he wants, pardon the pun. But he's really becoming a force on the PGA Tour for sure, and in golf's world stage outside the rope. So I commend him for that. You know, I think he's working hard to try to make sure that golf's in a healthy place.
Todd, do you think he's doing that selfishly because he's trying to protect the achievements and the legacy on the place where that gave him a platform to become arguably the greatest player of all time? Or do you think he has other motivations in terms of shaping what the future of the PGA Tour is going to look like?
I don't think he's doing it selfishly. I think he has an appreciation of what the tour has given him. From every indication, from what conversations I've had with him and hearing him in press conferences, I don't think there's any motivation on how this is going to benefit Tiger. And that's all that matters kind of thing. I think he really does care about the tour for sure. And the game of golf and making sure that it's still a powerful force in sports and recreationally as well. So I think it's purely organic, but I think it's motivated by the appreciation of the opportunities that he has been given to play on the PGA Tour and excel, obviously, on the PGA Tour as well.
Rex, what do you think?
Well, and I think you can make a similar comment about Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer on this front. I mean, they were instrumental back in the day of actually creating the PGA Tour, breaking it away from the PGA of America. And I think there was a similar idea among those two during that moment that they're trying to be good stewards here. That the right. Golf, and specifically professional golf, had given them everything in life. And they were trying to make sure that whatever came next, it was the right direction, not just for Jack or Arnie, but for the game of golf. And I think Tiger Woods has a very similar idea. Now, two things can be true, that yes, his legacy is directly tied to the PGA Tour. But no, I don't think he's doing it selfishly at all. I think he understands that the threats that the tour have faced over the last few years, LIV Golf being the primary one, now as they move into private equity and move into a for-profit model, he wants to make sure, just like Arnie and Jack, that it's the right direction.
Guys, we'll get out of here on this. And Rex, I'm looking at a wall in my office. It's a very large plaque. And I've it was it. When on golfchannel.com, we did the series of Tiger at 40. And my contribution, that's the one. If you're following along on YouTube, that indeed is the plaque that I also have. We did a group project, a series of stories examining Tiger at 40 and the different angles. We did win first place. Please do hold your applause until the end of the podcast. But my contribution that year, Rex, was Tiger at 40, why Tiger Woods still matters. And so I ask you guys, as we close out this podcast celebrating Tiger Woods's 50th birthday, does Tiger Woods still matter? If Tiger Woods still matters, how and why do you think that he still has enduring appeal, quite literally 48 years after he first came into our lives? Rex, you can start.
I want to start because we've had Todd on the pod before. He's a friend of the pod. Thank you so much for taking the time during a busy holiday season. And not once during this nearly 40-minute pod have I had to use the buzzer for TV Todd voice. So, like, very good. Like, I
thank you.
Don't do it. Also, I had to giggle a little bit about how he wanted to take the victory lap on the privacy pun that he threw out there. He was very proud of himself on that one. He matters because of the things we just discussed. I don't know competitively, and again, this is just being a little short-sighted. He's just coming off another back procedure. But when you see him walk into the media center, I would call it more of a struggle than I would a walk. It's hard to imagine how he ever shows up at Augusta again and finds that magic. But as we've seen time and time again, he's going to try. I think the problem specifically at Augusta is it's really hilly and it's usually cold. And after 2 or 3 days, you can see that it takes a toll. But no, I got out of the Tiger Woods doubting business a long time ago. So I'm not going to say right now that he's never going to win again. It would be an amazing story and it would be an incredible accomplishment. But I think the next chapter, and actually the story I wrote, is where does Tiger go from here, back in that packet. So I can't wait to read that and see all the things that I got wrong. I will say it's what he's going to do off the golf course that's going to be much more impactful. We've talked about the future competition committee and what happens to the PGA Tour. We've talked a lot about the Ryder Cup, and somehow the PGA of America seems to have lost his phone number, but he's going to be a captain, probably a multiple time captain, going into the future. And how does he mold that in his image and give the United States some sort of advantage on that stage? What he does with his foundation, all of the things that he's crafted off the golf course, I think it will be his lasting legacy from here.
Yeah, he may not be as powerful as he was from a playing perspective 20 years ago or so. But I still think if you go to Augusta National on a Tuesday or Wednesday and Tiger's in the field and he's playing a practice round and all, or along with the rest of the field, watch who has the biggest gallery. It's going to be Tiger Woods. It's going to be Tiger Woods. We still,
and why?
Well, this is obviously it's a, an appreciation for what he's done, for sure. He's turning 50. I don't think we need to find a career burial plot for him yet. I still think he's got some fight in him. I still think he can compete, whether it's at Augusta, that's a different story. But I think there's an appreciation by fans. And if you look at him as he's walking around looking like he still could play safety for the Denver Broncos, you think, wow, look at that athleticism. He's still got it. And we want to look, we want to see it. And maybe if he can, his body and his swing and his mind can all get in synchronicity at the right time, that he can put himself in contention again. I personally would like to see, look, I've said this before, but I'll say it one more time. There's always going to be the argument, who is the greatest ever? Is it Jack or is it Tiger? Jack's not going to be caught from most major championship victories. Tiger's not going to get him. But if he can get one more PGA Tour victory, I think that's something that he really wants to do. I mean, just stop playing the hardest golf courses with the toughest field. Go play.
He's
going to
show up at Innisbrook next year.
Hey,
yeah,
let me just tell you.
He almost won at Innisbrook.
Why wouldn't he?
He has not walked through that door.
Why wouldn't he show up at the Wyndham? Show up at a place that your game. Show up at Colonial. Show up a place where it's not going to be a lot on your body, not going to beat you down physically. It's not a hard walk, in other words, and it's a golf course that's not super long, where you can use your strengths, which is game management, superior wedge game when he was strong. Just go and do that. Win one more and get 83. And those who say that Tiger is the greatest of all time, they will have a feather in their cap.
Two things. One, I would still take Todd Lewis in a 50-yard dash over Tiger Woods right now, even though he might look like an NFL safety. So I'm taking you in the 40 over him right now, just based on what I saw in the Bahamas.
Such a sad parallel. It's just terrible.
That's what I'm going with right there. And the other half of it is, it's a very valid point that you make. I think we've made that argument for a long time, that if Tiger Woods maybe mixed his schedule up a little bit, PGA Tour win number 83 is probably much closer than I think most of us can even imagine. However, I'm going to say this the other way. And look, we have no idea what's going to happen next year when he turns 50, but imagine the impact he could have on PGA Tour champions. And you and I have spoken with a lot of players about this, yeah. Todd. The idea that he could have almost the same impact on that tour that he did on the PGA Tour when he came out in the late 90s. That's a very real concept. And I can imagine where, look, we keep talking about the U.S. Senior Open is clearly important to him. Everyone around him has made it clear that that would be something that's on his bucket list. He's won the Junior, he's won the AM, he's won the U.S. Open. Be the only player to ever win all of them if you added the Senior Open. That'd be pretty cool. He's friends with guys who have tournaments. Steve Stricker, he's got a Champions Tour event. Jim Furyk, he's got a Champions Tour event. I think it's a possibility that he can make a move on that tour.
Certainly would be interesting. Tiger Woods, for his part, at least at the Hero World Challenge, said, I have no idea. I don't know. It's TBD. I don't know whether I'm playing TGL matches in February. I don't know whether I'm playing the Genesis Invitational in February. I don't know whether I'm playing the Players Championship, the Masters, the U.S. Senior Open, the Furyk and Friends. It's all very much TBD as relates to Tiger Woods and his health. Tilly, what are you expecting from Tiger Woods, at least from a competitive standpoint, in 2026?
I think he'll try to push himself to play at Augusta National for the Masters. It may be aggressive rehab for him to get there. I think there's a decent chance he might show up there and play. From what I've heard, that everything has been going in a positive direction ever since that disc replacement surgery that he had. After that, I hope we get to see him play four times, at least in 2026, which would include the Masters if he's able to play that. And I hope that he does play a few events on the PGA Tour Champions, specifically Senior Major Championships. I'm interested, to be honest with you, to your point, Rex. I think you're right. Absolutely, he could superbly elevate the PGA Tour Champions. But those guys, and you've been around them, when they make that transition from 49 to 50, they still think they can win on the PGA Tour, and ego gets in the way to make that transition to the PGA Tour Champions. And when you're talking about a guy who believes in himself, like Tiger Woods has believed in himself in his career, I'm interested to see how that transition takes place, or frankly, if that transition takes place to the PGA Tour Champions in 2026.
Yeah, Rex and I have talked about that a couple times. If you are going to burn a couple of your starts in 2026 with the potential for any sort of injury setback, are you going to use them at the Open Championship, or are you going to use them at a run-of-the-mill PGA Tour Champions event to get some reps that way? I'm still a little bit skeptical it's going to be the latter. Rex and I are not betting men. We're not gamblers. Don't come to us for any sort of betting advice. I do think like a 2.5 tournament start over under in 2026 makes a lot of sense. I do hope that he smashes the over, because just as you guys have done
two in the hook, you're 30 years. Good.
Yeah. Two in the hook. Just as you guys have done for the past 25 years covering Tiger Woods expertly, we'll be back for more in 2026 and beyond. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Live with special guest Todd Lewis. And just as a reminder, you can go to golfchannel.com for Rex's top 50 moments, a fun assortment of great shots, great moments, great achievements, going to be up on the website this week. That's going to do it for this edition. Talk to you guys in a couple of days.